enlightening interlude about the personality of the Rambam coming through in his correspondence with Pinchas Adayan.
Is that his most famous external letter?
No.
I mean, there are letters about, you know, his brothers to the Amnite community, but I see that he's revealing his personality.
No. No. It's not all that well known a letter, but it's a marvelous letter. And I want to conclude tonight with the situation within the Muslim lands and under the Rambam and elsewhere. So let's do, and then pass on to a much more difficult historical problem and then describe what was going on in the Ashkenazi communities. So let's read this one last shuvah of the Rambam just to get a feel for what he was dealing with and up against. She'ela. Reuven v'Shimon yesh b'nehem chatzer b'shutfut bilti mechulekeh. Reuven and Shimon are partners in an indivisible lot. Reuven v'achetzi, or the Shimon v'achiv hachetzi kol echad mehem b'shaveh. So Reuven owned one half of this piece of property, and Shimon and his brother owned the other half of this piece of property, and the piece of property could not be subdivided. Reuven lived on this property for a certain amount of time, paying rent to Shimon. Achakach ratza Shimon v'achiv ladur sham, v'atuk Reuven v'dor Shimon v'achiv. Lo ratza Reuven lahaskir lahem chelko b'erach haskirut asher hayu noten lahim shli Shimon. But Reuven didn't agree to rent to Shimon and his brother at the same price that they were renting to him. Amar Shimon Levetin, Hatzer Yesh Babed Meiz Medurot, Mala Umata, the property has two floors, an upstairs and a downstairs. Nadur Anachnu Be'echad Yadur, Hu O Yaskur Ha'achad Lasher Yotze. Let us live upstairs, and or in one of them, and let him live on the other, or rent out the other piece of the other apartment to whomever he wants. So they made an agreement with this. So they annually renewed the lease, whereby one of Mala umat. Pam at pam zebi echad upam haacher. Itugoral beinehem nafal haef elyon azru uvein batachton l'shimon v'yakim. They would choose by lot who would get the upstairs and who would get the downstairs apartment. I don't know which is more which is better. Okay. Hiskur Reuven ha'elyon Yehudim midei shana echad. Achar kach he'etik Shimon l'mala v'Reuven hiskir mato l'goy. So finally, after Reuven got the bottom apartment, instead of renting it out to Jews, he decided to rent it out to Muslims. Pachadu ala chatzer medirat ha'goyim sham, Shimon, mepnei zeh Yehudi achar she'sachar chatzer gimul shalem v'nadar Shimon v'achiv v'chatzer kula l'shamra v'asokeh ha'yalokeh ha'skirut mimenu u'poreh l'Reuven. Apparently they were able to get somebody to help them out by moving in and subletting from the guy and paying the rent to Reuven. V'kashir shlim zman ha'skirut v'kesh Shimon v'Reuven l'haskir rov chelko. After this time was up, Shimon wanted Reuven to rent him his part. So there was a dispute as to how to dispose of this property. Take your choice whether you want to live upstairs or downstairs. Omale Reuven, I need Ladurba, Kamosha Dauta Ata. Reuven said, I want both apartments. I'm only Shimon, Ani Adurba Chalki, Hein Lamala Ulamata, Kamosha Chilek Benotenu Betin. I want to abide by the decision of the Betin. I'll take either the upstairs or the downstairs apartment. Ulogatsa Reuven Baze, Finishaha Elyon Reik, Kishiur, Shnechalashim Vachetzi. So the upstairs apartment was left empty on the basis of this dispute for about 2.5 months. Look, you have four options: either rent, rent it to me, or buy me out at such and such a price, or I'll buy you out at the exact same price. Oh, nelech levetin lerot ma shiyachayvunu. Oh, naskim al ma shenaskim. So he tried to force Reuven into some kind of an agreement. Now Reuven claimed, Yeshli ra'aya b'goyim, I have a valid proof in the Islamic courts. Ve'lo adun zolati ba'acha'ot shel goyim. I insist that we take this case not to the Bet Din, but to the Islamic courts. Amar Beit Din l'Shimon, then the Beit Din said to Shimon, Telechim oledinei ha'goyim. Go settle the matter with him in the Islamic courts. Heviru Uvein edei sheker goyim. Reuven hired some perjurous witnesses, non-Jewish perjurous witnesses. Heidu al Shimon v'Achiv sheskiru lo chelkam la'ar l'sheish shanim. They testified that Shimon had left them their portion for a matter of 6 years. Dana shofet al pi dikbehem. So the judge adjudicated the case on the basis of these perjured witnesses. V'chiev lahem lechtov lo shtar schirut l'sheish shanim. And he forced Shimon to write him a lease for 6 years. Asaze, v'tava me'achiv gam ken lasod kacha ad shakana chatzer v'lo alayu biyado ze ad sheyaviu eidim lefnei ha-shofet ha-gadol v'nishar ha-chatzer hekanitz manul ba. So that's the story of the case. A complicated, seemingly unimportant case between two brothers and a second party on the issue of how to dispose of a piece of land that they held jointly. Toreinu hadrato al hara'uy bazeh. Let us know what, your honor should let us know, this is still part of the question to the Rambam, what should be done with this? Em ra'uy leveitin lomar l'shimon teilechim uvein ladin l'goyim mibli ones ve'ein bazeh avera al inyan ha'takana. Was it proper in the first place for the Jewish court to instruct Shimon to go to the Islamic courts? After all, we had a communal enactment which prohibited anyone from going to the from the use of the non-Jewish, from the use of the Islamic courts. Al mishi yelech l'dinei ha-goyim, ve'im Reuven chayav al masha asa ba'omro lo nadun b'dinei Yisrael d'nei b'dinei goyim. And is Reuven liable for punishment for the fact that he insisted on having the case brought before the Islamic courts? Ve'im haschirut shenichtava b'dinei goyim tibatel, and if the Jewish court decides that the lease that was enforced by the non-Jewish courts is null and void, then dina de good over good imlav. Do we apply the rule, which is good or good? This is a rule between two partners in general who own a joint piece of property, which cannot be subdivided, that one can say to the other, either buy me out or I'll buy you out. That's the usual way of dealing with this property, that one or the other of the two partners can demand in court that either you buy me out or I'll buy you out. Oh, yitchayev l'haniyah chelek mulkav sheshanim lo yimkor, oh, v'imyukal l'mkor l'goyim im bal dino kashev anas, v'im yesh l'beitin l'mkot al shimon v'zeh imlav, v'im yichayev beitin, etc. A whole list of questions of how to deal with this mess, which was brought about by the fact that the Jewish court in this case simply threw the case over to the non-Jewish courts. Tshuva. Now here's the Rambam's response. Ein ra'oi al echad mi batei dinei Yisrael letzavot leba'al din l'sheyelech ladun b'dinei ha-goyim. No Jewish court should ever tell a Jewish litigant that he should go for his case to the non-Jewish courts. Ve'im ta'a v'tziva bazeh. And if the court did err and do such a thing, without there being a good and valid reason for doing so, it is a great sin. And anything that was done by the non-Jewish courts in this matter is null and void. And a lease which is certified in the non-Jewish courts is the same as a deed of sale. Veloto il klum, and these kinds of documents have no validity whatsoever. Zulati b'tnaim b'lti mitzuyum achshav, except in circumstances which we don't find in our day in Egypt. I'll come back to this point in a moment. The issue here is the general perception of the honesty and lack of bribery in the non-Jewish courts. And this varied from time to time. We'll see two Tshuvot of the Gaonim, one which says that the Islamic courts here in Baghdad only accept completely reliable witnesses, etc., and therefore are thoroughly reliable. And in another one, dealing with a different time and place, saying that one can't trust the Islamic courts whatsoever because they're corrupt. Okay. But the Rambam is saying is that this notion of relying on the honesty and uprightness of the Islamic courts doesn't apply in our time and place. V'lachein im yomar shelo hiskir mitzoni zulati behechrach. Therefore, if Shimon, whoever it was, says that he did not agree to lease except he was forced, hu ne'eman ve'eno tzarich lahavi al zera ayam in Yisrael. Amnam nikach bal dino v'nomar lo ata eskater lezecha v'kav v'tzoncha leben shanim v'yishiba az shuvat heset shelo heskira zulati ba'ones goyim v'yishair dina de good o agud. As long as the defendant in this case takes an oath saying that he never voluntarily, except under perhaps pressure from the Islamic court, was willing to engage in such a lease, that's all he has to do, and then the law remains that one or the other partner can demand that the other one sell. Okay? The Yishaer Dina the good al good. Ve'im yatchazek ze asher biyado haschirut bedinei agoyim la'akev alav achuzato. And if this fellow who is still holding this lease enacted by the non-Jewish court is persistent in trying to apply Islamic law to this situation, natil alav cher. Okay. So that's the Rambam's decision. I noticed that once again the Rambam insisted that he not sign this document alone, but as we saw last week, ani maskim al zot ha'orah ve'ein cholek oleh ha'shum echad miyachachamim ha'kdolim v'katav Yitzhak v'asason ani maskim al zot ha'orah v'omodeh v'katav Shmuel v'asa'adim. So this is the Rambam's decision in this case. The Jewish court had no right to throw the case to the Islamic court, and any decision that the Islamic court made, including the certification of a phony lease, is null and void. The lease, therefore, is null and void. And the Talmudic law, which says that one or the other of these two partners can insist that either to the other, either you buy me out or I'll buy you out at a fixed price, remains. Okay? But this is not the end of the story. So let's now turn the page. She'ela. V'hu em she'ech l'tshuva ha'kodem. This is a continuation of the previous story. V'ka'asher hegiya ha'orah ha'azot. When this decision from the Rambam's court came down, I guess wherever this place, I suppose it was in Alexandria, took place. Karu oto b'yom Shabbat b'beit ha'kneset b'rabim. They read this decision of the Rambam's court aloud in the synagogue. V'amru la'dayan la'asot al-piyam. And they said to the Jewish judge to follow the instructions that the Rambam gave. Heishiv lo uchal mipachti me'ashofet shelo yahargen. I'm afraid to carry this out because the Islamic judge will kill me if I go against his decision. Halchu imal ashofet v'hodiyuhu. They went with the dayan, with the Jewish judge, to the Islamic judge and let him know the circumstances of this whole situation. Amar ha-shofet, ein lanu aleichem din. We don't involve ourselves in Jewish law. You have your own autonomy. Asu kedinchem ma she'tirtzu. You decide this case according to your law. So instead of killing him, he certified that the Jewish judge had the right to make the decision. V'haya sham beiz Yehudim, tafa achar kach ha-baal din, v'lo ratza la'asot. The judge himself took an oath that he didn't want to deal with this case. Obviously, he was still afraid to deal with the case. And they couldn't find anybody else to adjudicate the case. And one of the parties to the case did not want to eliminate this so-called lease. He said that he has ceded this property to his minor children, to his young sons, the law is that if minors inherit property, then this law that one partner can force the other to sell, you can't impose this law on minors because they don't have a will of their own to be able to decide to sell, and the guardian that's appointed by the court normally will not sell their property unless there is valid reason for doing so. So in other words, the law is that good or good doesn't apply to minor children. Okay, so that's a fair little wrinkle. He tried to escape the decision of the Rambam by ceding the property to his minor children. Okay. So there you return the problem to the Rambam, what to do with this case, with this new wrinkle attached. Tshuva. Kol mi sheyiten l'ktanim davar, anyone who makes a gift to minors, oto hadavar nishal lahem kamo nechsei yitomim mamash, this property remains in their possession like the property of orphans. Lepisha beitin hu amumuna al inyan zeh kata. Ve'im anachnu, afilu b'chobot amkoyim nema enzik tekem l'neskei yichonim, al natinat eich natil alayhem din the good or a good, ein li yibetin li yicholat azeh b'shum panim ad sheyu yigdulu haktanim. He says, normally, if a request that a gift is made to minor children, then the law that forces them to either sell or buy doesn't apply. This would be the law, kasher zeha nitva b'dina the good or a good, natan levanav b'matana kayemet kodem sheitva'u shatafu b'davav. But this only applies if he made this gift prior to having been summoned by the plaintiff. Amnam imtav obedina, the good or good, but if there was already a claim made by one of the partners, either buy or sell, v'ratzach hakach lihinatzel, and he wanted to escape from this, v'yoto notno levanav, lo yihi azeh, this cannot apply. Amnam beitin yatil ze ala kata. Limko o likno, etc. In yesh palavas areva haskiut mizman etc. etc. And then he goes on to the other details of the case. So here's I think we get a picture of what the Rambam was up against. That is, there were always these attempts to try to evade the Jewish law by one way or another, and especially the attempt to evade the Jewish law by turning to the Islamic courts, even though the Islamic courts themselves were not necessarily interested in imposing Islamic law on the Jews. So with these cases and the previous stories from last week in mind, we understand full well the anger that's inherent in the Rambam's language that we studied in the very first shiur, so let me remind you of this. Kol hadan b'dinei avodei kelchavim uve'arkaot shalahem afal pishe chayudinehem kidinei Yisrael, hareze rasha, ukeilu charaf vagadaf veherim yad betorat Moshe Rabbein, sheneemar ve'elu hamishpatim asher tasim lefnehem, lefnehem velo lefnei akum, lefnehem velo lefnei hetyoto. Hayta yad ha'akum tekeifa uval dinei oileim, eino yechol leotzid emenu bedayinei Yisrael, yitveenu lidei Yisrael tchila, im lo ratza lavo noten rushut mi beitinu meitzil bedinei akum, etc. So the Rambam's rather strong and emotional language, namely that someone who turns to non-Jewish courts is raising his hand against the laws of Moshe, is reflecting, A, the realities of the Islamic world in which a Jew would normally be expected to go before a Jewish judge, and therefore a two Jewish litigants who turned to the Islamic courts are indeed expressing treason against the Jewish people and their autonomy. And secondly, we can see the kinds of troubles he actually had in practice. He had to enact a community enactment against going to the non-Jewish courts. And we saw several cases last week, and we see again this week, the fact that he was up against really unpleasant situations involving all of this.
Is there any data to Marcos by him?
No.
We read
in the Quran that the Islamic law was the Jews have their own judges and law. When there's a case between two judges, Jews shouldn't come before Islamic judges.
And why were the Islamic courts?
Because the Quran also says that if they do come before you to judge, then you have to judge them fairly and honestly. So let's summarize the situation, because it's a little subtle. On the one hand, throughout the Islamic world, one had a notion of a centralized authority appointing professional judges. Whether these professional judges were up to snuff or not, according to the Rambam standards, we saw last week that he had some rather unpleasant things to say about judges who immigrated from France as a class in terms of their knowledge of practical law. But they were appointed by the Rambam. The Rambam himself, as we saw, rebelled against the authority of the Gaonim, but still, this was consonant to what was going on politically in the Islamic world altogether, namely the shift of power from the powers that be in Baghdad to Salah ad-Din, who was ruling in Egypt at the time. So, in summary, the judges in the Jewish courts were basically Talmidei Chachamim, who were appointed, they were educated judges who were appointed by the central authority. Secondly, as we saw, at least during the time of the Gaonim, less so during the time of the Rambam, the Jewish judges always had the Islamic courts in the back of their minds looking over their shoulders. So therefore, if Jewish law, for one reason or other, became impossible on a large segment of the community, they were willing to make adjustments in Jewish law in order to make it, in order to avoid precisely having intervention from non-Jewish forces. And that's why we saw that the Gaonim, as opposed to the Rambam, were willing to give the woman the right to institute and force a divorce. There was a period of 400 years or 500 years throughout the reign of the Gaonim in which the woman had equal rights with the man, at least as far as instituting a divorce case, something that hasn't happened since. The Rambam reacted against that and still maintained that the wife has the right to insist on a divorce if she claims that she finds her husband repulsive or repugnant to him. He just didn't go as far as the Gaonim in terms of being able to do this without a severe financial penalty. But at any rate, we also saw couple of weeks ago that the Gaonim were willing, in terms of mercantile law, to simply replace whole chunks of Talmudic law on the issue of transferability of debts, for example, and follow the law merchant. That was that short shuva of Rabbi Gaon in Arabic that we got. So we have a situation, to summarize, in which there were rebellions, and in the next two shuvot of the Gaonim, which I may skip for the sake of time, or maybe we will read them, the Gaonim had ambivalent attitudes towards the reliability of the Islamic courts, whether they were honest or not. They were sensitive to pressures both within and without the population as a whole, and the judiciary was organized in the sense that it was centrally appointed and administered from above. So that's more or less a rough picture of what was going on. Yes?
Just a technical question. Tshuva B, mm-hmm. the second Tshuva, mm-hmm. the cession or the ceding of property by Reuven, mm-hmm. is the Rambam comment that since his Tshuva A came first, in which he says...
Yeah. He's saying that
it's not valid, right?
He's saying that transfer of property is not valid. Okay, I brought a third tshuva, I believe. Is it there? Yeah. In if you look on the next, is it on the next page? Yes. This is a third tshuva of the Rambam dealing just more abstractly and precisely with this issue of whether the transfer of property to minor children can avoid the law of good or avod. Sheila bedvar habanim haktanim shenatan lahem avihem Mali ben Elias ben David Hashech ben Almansur ben Elias b'matana machzit hachatzer shalehem hayariv b'neihem b'din gira olgul k'dei shelo yichayivam b'dizeh hadin. This is a more abstract issue, not all of the accompanying details, about whether the transfer of property to minors can avoid the law of good or good. Okay. All right, just let's skip a bit. B'zeh ha'dalio demata kolim shetavu ha'dbedin. Aval im nitva ha'vihem b'zeh ha'din ונשתמת ממנו בזאת המתנה, הוא מחייב הבנים הקטנים ויעמיד להם בדין האפוטרופוס שימכור עבורם או יקנה להם. In other words, that particular tshuva deals precisely with the issue of whether a person who is afraid of being sued for this law of either sell or buy transfers the minor children to avoid this, then that transfer is null and void as far as this law is concerned. That is, then the court guardian, a court-appointed guardian, will be instructed to either buy or sell on behalf of the children. Okay. All right. Right. We'll read two tshuvot from the Gaonim on the next couple of pages, dealing with their attitude towards non-Jewish courts, so different from one another. Simon Reish Lamed Tes. Shtarot ha'olot be'achaot shel goyim, shechotmehem goyim, v'kitfi lehem v'cheif, I don't know what that is, o v'namei v'dafter, o machashvinen lo ha'idna, do we rely on these, o be'inen aid, do who so Zafi Osh up defits some kind of writing, Shainu Yoholis Dayefi Shesa, etc. Hafi Chazina. This is the response of the Gaon. Chazina da hashta lotzuchina bishitvel iune bimagilta ktivin of a kefa valom islam iltam in yena bishita ona ilam yishum de inan lo samchina al katvoi, because the courts themselves do not rely solely on written evidence. The ain olin viachaot shelahem, they do not certify a deed, v'loma kablin, and don't accept them, ela edut edim shehim sochsen shehim mumchim l'shoftim shelahem. They only accept the testimony of witnesses which are known to the judges themselves, sheme edim al peh ve'omim al peh zeh she'anu yodim lo ba'atzmo uv'shmo uv'yichuso he'id otanu al'atzmo l'ploni she'anu yodim oto uv'atzmo uv'shmo uv'henu v'chach v'chach. אבל אם יצא שטר, אף על פי שיש עליו כתב ידי עדים, אין שופטים הגויים הללו סמכים עליו, ואף כן אנו עושים בשטרות שלהם. They do not rely simply on a written document whatsoever. כי אמר אמן בדי אף תיצא מגיל תובעת, etc. עכשיו שלב, ואין אלו מייק משמעון בבובה לשון נתין, etc. So the Gaon is simply saying that the procedures in the non-Jewish courts are sufficiently precise that we will follow their procedures entirely. Well, let's take a look at the next page. Shtarot ha'olim ve'achot shel goyim b'zman hazeh magabim anu bahem. We enforce such written evidence that have been filed in the non-Jewish courts. Ela shamatzinu tshuva v'katuv behem she'ein magabim behem v'lo l'maydem d'chayshinon l'ziyufi. Except that we saw that it says that we don't accept them because we're worried about fraud. וכי אבינו מגיעים להנמיל בדורות הראשונים שהיו חכמי ישראל מוחזקים בהם שלא היו מזויפים. That was in the early days when the Jewish judges were sure that these documents were not forged. אבל בדורות הללו שאנו בקיאים מהם שכל עסקיהם שקרנות וכזבנות. But nowadays that we know that all of these courts are corrupt, אין ללמוד משטריהם כלל שכולם בחזקת זיופה.
Feel that way before, in the previous chapter.
That's right. It's just different times. Hachi chazina. This is what we see. Ki hamadina hazot she'anu achshav betocha, this city that we're in today, v'hi Baghdad, the city of Baghdad, ein mekablim b'yachot shel goyim ela edim pikchim u'gdolim v'yashirim shelo ala lehem gezel v'lo divoy sheker v'lo divoy shav she'v'shem tzuyanim b'datam v'nikoyim el madlin. They only accept as witnesses people of the upper classes who are known to be honest and pious. Kugon elu im heidu al shtar mecho al va'av esedut heidot ba'achot shelahem v'kiblan ha'shofet shelahem af anu nami danino tam v'otor shtar v'kashehu etzlein. V'chein min hagenu achshav ma'asim b'kol yom. And that's our custom today in Baghdad. V'am benidot ha'cherot ha'gerolot shubo ba'avel, yesh ben mi she'edei b'gergirim ha'mutzavim le'edut kachem mutzuyanim b'latam u'mavim lizahir v'davar shav v'kol shekem v'divrei sheker. Ve'ein anu yodim ma b'libam, v'kol ha'goyim ein adenu v'sodam el v'cheskat kasher el v'kesheim ha'marim, etc., etc. So he's just again emphasizing that this, in here in Baghdad today, I don't know exactly when this tshuva was written, the courts are not corrupt, and the Rambam that we just read a few moments ago was simply saying that in his time, in the time of Salah ad-Din in Egypt, you can't rely on any honesty of any of the Islamic courts. So this isn't a contradiction of principle, it's just a matter of there were periods of time in which the Jewish judges felt that the non-Jewish courts were honest and incorruptible, and other times in which they felt that they were basically corrupt.
He actually says in Baghdad they're corruptible, but in other places they are upstanding.
Well, he says in Baghdad they're also said they're good.
He says only that they only accept.
That's right. The courts will not certify a deed unless they're sure that the people whose evidence they're taking is honest.
But everywhere else, apparently, they don't take anyone because everyone.
And furthermore, in other places, we don't know. So it varies from place to place. I just brought that for us to understand what the Rambam is saying, that the reliability of the non-Jewish courts holds under certain circumstances that don't apply today in this country. Meaning Egypt in his time. Yeah. Exactly. That's what he's saying. Exactly. Okay, so I think we have a picture of what is going on in the Islamic lands.
You learned music right before in Chopin opera, that it absolutely don't go to any Islamic or whatever.
Right.
So they just explain like the prohibition, don't make the
right. But now we understand that this statement in the Shulchan Aruch that we learned on the very first night, which is just a transcription of the Rambam, we now understand that this statement of the Rambam was made in the circumstances that the Rambam found himself. This is your point. That is, that the Rambam was A, dealing with a situation where the alternative to Jewish courts were Islamic courts, not some form of a civil court that was devoid of religious affiliation, because all courts were attached to one religion or another. And B, the Rambam's strong and rather violent language reflected his personal experience, as we say. So what I'm saying is that blindly reading the Shulchan Aruch as it's written, which is just a direct quote from the Rambam, without taking into account the circumstances in which the Rambam wrote this, and also the Rambam's own personal experiences and personal anger in writing this statement, is just misconstruing the halach.
To carry that forward, that anything in the Shulchan Aruch, well, at that time when it was written, maybe it made sense, but it didn't make sense now. And so there's nothing really authoritarian about it. And I might as well say everything can be weighed against history. Wow.
Well, I didn't make that generalization. You're making such a generalization. I'm just simply saying, in this particular instance,
you're extrapolating to what's to everything else.
You're extrapolating.
Yes, I am.
I'm not making that. I refuse to make that extrapolation. You make such an extrapolation. I'm simply saying that as far as this particular halacha is concerned, the attitudes towards the non-Jewish courts that were expressed by the Rambam were expressed in a time and a circumstance where the alternatives to Jewish courts were Muslim courts, A, and B, were expressing the Rambam's own difficult experience with the fact that many of his people were overturning the decisions of the Jewish courts, or trying to weasel out of the decisions of the Jewish courts by turning to the non-Jewish courts. So the Rambam was expressing justified anger when he wrote that statement, but it doesn't necessarily apply to all times and place. Okay? Not okay.
You're making
a general statement that whenever we try to understand every single law has to be made historically relative. And I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that this particular law, as we will continue to see, for instance, take your example. Here, on the next page, this is from the Nimukim of the Menachem Yeriz book. Lived around the time of the Maharizeh, so we're talking about sometime in the 14th century. I'm now turning to Ashkenazi communities, okay? So, by page 6, I believe, is it?
Okay.
Din, Imya, very left, in the left, lower left-hand corner. Din, Im Ya'idu Eidim Sheshimon Hutsi Shema Ruvain of Negoyim Kodem Hutsaat Ruvain Shekibel Shofet, Harehu Shimon Kemavir Eish. If Shimon turned to the non-Jewish courts against Ruvain before a Jewish judge has actually decided this, this is as if he actually set fire to Ruvain's fields. V'chayav lefor Ruvain kol hefseido.
So
the question is, to what degree is Shimon financially responsible for having called this case to the attention of the non-Jewish courts? All right. Next page. Okay. V'din im v'derech. If the custom in that town was that it was normal practice to go to non-Jewish courts to complain in a civil case or a case of damage to non-Jews, in other words, in those towns in which there was effective Jewish courts, then turning to a non-Jewish court was not considered as a crime or a sin, and therefore there would be no liability. So here, this is before the time of the Shulchan Aruch. I'm not making anything relativistic here. This is a statement in the 15th century or 14th century Ashkenaz that there will be those places in which the Jews, as a matter of practice, will turn to non-Jewish courts. Okay, I'm starting from a late period in Ashkenazic history. Remember, I should start from the beginning of the 10th century. At the moment, I'm starting from the 14th and 15th century and working my way backwards because I want to be able to pose what the problem is. It will take us a while to actually be able to resolve it. Let's turn to the next page. Because Mr. Weinstein was saying that I have made things relativistic by saying that this particular statement of the Shulchan Aruch was just a quote from the Rambam, and the Rambam was representing a particular time and place. I'm just simply showing that the actual practice in other, prior to the time of the Shulchan Aruch, in Ashkenaz, where there were no effective, in those communities in which there were no effective Jewish courts, people would turn to non-Jewish courts as a matter of course. So this isn't my evaluation or relativization of the Shulchan Aruch, it's just a statement of what the actual practice was. Okay? So one has to, one doesn't relativize every single statement that's in the Shulchan Aruch, but in this particular statement, we can see that the actual view towards the problem from the point of view of from Jewish, responsible Jewish authorities is not what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Let's read the next thing, which is a famous document. Okay? All right, it's a little hard to read.
excuse me, how do you interpret the previous page, the last thing in the bottom of 6? Why is he liable if he doesn't?
What?
Bottom of 6.
Yes.
Says he's liable if he goes in the Motzi Shemra.
Yeah, he's liable. There was a prohibition against. That there is a Jewish court present. In the presence of a Jewish court, the obligation was to turn to the Jewish courts.
So then that does not disagree with the Rambam at all.
Well, the Rambam is not dealing. All that I'm saying is, yeah, I'm not saying that it disagrees with the Rambam. I'm simply saying that the turning to the non-Jewish courts as a court of first instance isn't intrinsically a sin. It depends upon whether there is a Jewish court available.
But it's not clear to me that the Rambam would not have said the same thing.
Probably he would have said the same thing. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just considering a situation where we're, say, living in Boston or New York today, and to say that to turn to the court of the state of New York or the state of Massachusetts is a sin, which is akin to a Avodah Zarah, the way Rabbi Bleich is telling us, even though there are no Jewish courts around, is just simply a misrepresentation of the fact. Okay. Let's take a look.
This is Rabbi Bleich from New York.
Mm-hmm. We studied that in the very first. Okay. Let's turn to the next. All right. Right. This is hard to read, so let's try to read this together. I'm reading 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines from the top. 8 lines from the top in this column.
Page 7.
My page 8. Oh. This is from a manuscript of the Sefer Hasidim. Okay? Bnei Adam. Bnei Adam, Shemahalchim Ba'aretz. I don't know what this next word says. It comes to Makom Lagor Sham. As people are moving and trying to decide which city to live in, Ya'aynu b'yoshvei ha'aretz ba'oto ha'ir, they should examine the Christian population of that town, ma inyan ha'goyim, what property do the non-Jews have, im gedurim be'erva, whether they are constrained as far as sexual misbehavior is concerned. In other words, are they promiscuous or not? Da, im yaduru yehudim bioto hiir, because you should know that if Jews do dwell in this city, gam b'nehem v'notehem yu osim kugayim. What's that word? Ko'otam. Yasu something or other by him kaotam. They will behave like the non-Jews. Kiminhagagayim, like the practice of non-Jews. Ki kol ir ve'ir, in each and every town, kiminag hagayim kein minag yehudim. In each and every town, the Jews behave just like the non-Jews. This is a famous quote of the Sefer Hasidim, "Vias Kristal Tzach Hazayis Yiltzach." Whatever the ambient non-Jewish practice is, that's going to be how the Jews behave. She'im lahem barol hamakomot. V'yesh makomot, he says, she'ha'amim danim be'emet v'lo ha'yehudim. And there are places in which the non-Jewish courts are honest and not the Jewish courts. Mipnei what's this next word? She'enam talmidei chachamim sham, because there are no scholars there. Ela mekubatzot merubot o memkamot merubot, that they're coming from many different places, melukatim harbe mishpachot, and from many families without pedigrees. ויתמסר, etc., ממקומות אחר, some of the immigrants come from places in שתרבותיהם רע, and I can't make that next word אחריהם. But in any event, he's making two statements, one which is perhaps the most famous statement in the Sefer Chassidim, namely that Tzvius Kristaltzach Hazei Tzidltzach, namely the Jewish behavior follows the non-Jewish pattern. And secondly, he's also making the statement that there will be places in which the non-Jewish courts are not corrupt, whereas the Jewish courts are. Okay. Now, in order to respond to Mr. Weinstein's question, I'll bring down something that I want to say. I was planning to take this up a little bit later, but just again in response. Tzitz hamateh, v'perach, hayot, etc., etc. This is one of the famous enactments of Rabbeinu Tam. Lachenu atzu libenu ziknei tragesh v'chachameho, v'asher begvuleha sabir chachmei digon v'sivote golei al Suria. Veshan suvnoteha, veshishe Orleans, veshiveha aretz, veachenu yoshvi kalonis, all of the towns on the Rhine and also from France. Vachmei gvul Rhinus, varapenu sheva Paris, veshichnehem, vachmei yoatzim, etc. Yoshe Normandia, vachevel hayam, that's probably England, vagyo, vachotia, vachodei dorenu, yoshvei eretz lutir, vachniskarim po, yeshan kvash eskimu, veyesha shalom.